Next case on our calendar is A18-1504, State of Minnesota versus Felix Antonio Rayford. Morning, Council. As you set up, each of you has 15 minutes for argument. Council for appellant, 5 minutes for rebuttal. And when you each take the podium, just state your name and the party you represent for the record after you have it set up.
There's severe thunderstorm warnings until 1.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Anders Erickson, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Felix Rayford. Mr. Rayford is challenging the constitutionality of the no-knock entry into the apartment where the search was conducted and the evidence against Mr. Rayford was obtained. Mr. Rayford is also challenging the sufficiency of the evidence related to the aiding and abetting sale of cocaine conviction. I would like to start this morning by quickly addressing the state's argument that the challenge to the authorization of the no-knock warrant was not presented to the district court. This argument is simply wrong and not supported by the record. Mr. Rayford filed a motion where he included 5 reasons why evidence should be suppressed. One of those reasons was because the warrant did not authorize the no-knock entry, that there was not reasonable suspicion in support of that claim. Then there was an evidentiary hearing. At the evidentiary hearing, the only evidence that was presented was related to issues, suppression issues that were outside of the four corners of the warrant that needed additional testimony. After this hearing, Ms. Rayford's attorney filed a memorandum that included only arguments related to the evidence that was presented at the hearing. And most importantly, the state responded, and in the response had a specific argument that there was reasonable suspicion within the four corners of the warrant. So below, there was no one believed that this was withdrawn or that Mr. Rayford had somehow abandoned this argument, and this is best explained in the state's memorandum after the hearing. So with that, I think this court has ample reason to review the issue and find that the four corners did not establish that there was reasonable suspicion to search, for the no-knock entry. If I could go directly to the substance of that argument, the state has to establish that there's reasonable suspicion that either the evidence would be destroyed or that there's a danger to the officers when they would enter the apartment. In this case, the warrant application did not include any allegation that there would be destruction of evidence outside boilerplate language that they needed to enter without announcing because there could be evidence tampered with. Under Richards and all the Minnesota Supreme Court case law, Garza, they've all said that that's not enough. As far as whether there's danger to the officers, there were 3 points the state made. One was that there was drug trafficking, and we know that's not enough. We know from Richards, we know from all the Minnesota Supreme Court case law that that is not enough just to allege that there's drug trafficking. Second was that Mr. Smith, the target of their allegations and their investigation, had driven around somewhere in Duluth with some unknown black man who had a firearm.
But the allegations plainly suggested that he was involved in some sort of a drug selling operation, weren't they?
Mr. Smith or this unknown man?
Mr. Smith.
The target of the investigation was Mr. Smith, that's correct.
So why isn't the simple fact that he is palling around with someone with a gun a reason to think that this is a drug operation that involves people who use firearms?
Because there's nothing that connects that allegation to the apartment.
Well, why isn't his association with Mr. Smith sufficient to do that? Smith is plainly associated with the apartment, isn't he?
Mr. Smith, yes, absolutely.
Doesn't it convey the sense anyway, if not very precisely, that the apartment is the center of the operation?
Absolutely. The apartment is, the allegation is that the apartment is the center of.
So we have that there's a drug operation being conducted from this apartment. Smith is a key player in it, and he pals around with people with at least one person with a gun.
Somewhere else that we don't know about that's not connected to the apartment.
But why does that matter?
Because the search is of the apartment. And they are.
Right, but if the operation involves the use of firearms, what kind of a leap is it to say that the the center of the operation, the apartment, would involve firearms?
I think it's equally a leap to conclude that the operation involves firearms. Mr. Smith was seen on one occasion somewhere else with a man in his car with a firearm. That's all we know. We don't know who this man is. We don't know if that man had ever been to the apartment. The confidential informants had never been inside the apartment. They don't provide any allegation that there were any weapons ever inside the apartment. It's just one situation where a confidential informant said that an unknown black man was in a car with Mr. Smith somewhere in Duluth. And that isn't, there's no nexus to the apartment from that allegation. And nowhere else in the warrant application is there any allegation that there is ever a weapon inside of this apartment. And that contrasts from Wasson, where that was the allegation, was that law enforcement had found multiple weapons weeks before the search. There simply is not a case that says that they don't have to articulate some danger at the place that's being searched, or that the people involved at the apartment were dangerous. The third part of the search warrant in support of the no-knock entry was Mr. Smith's criminal history. Nowhere in this allegation does it state that Mr. Smith was ever convicted of a violent crime. The only allegations were that he was arrested for crimes in Chicago, but we don't know what happened with those. We don't have any information in the warrant application that says that he had a firearm, that he was violent in those situations, or that he actually committed the crimes. There's only one allegation that he was convicted of a crime, and that was a drug offense, where the search warrant lays out that he actually served a prison sentence for that crime. So those three factors do not establish reasonable suspicion. And I think it's important that while this isn't probable cause and it is a lesser standard, our Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court have stated what is not reasonable suspicion. And what is not reasonable suspicion is drug trafficking. And that's the only objective information that we have regarding this apartment, is that there's possible drug dealing going on. And that is simply not enough. For those reasons, the search warrant did not include reasonable suspicion. But in addition to that, law enforcement at the time of the entry did not properly reappraise the situation to determine whether there was danger inside. And we know this because the officers knew that Mr. Smith had been arrested. The focus of their investigation was Mr. Smith. The focus of the reason for going into the apartment without knocking was that Mr. Smith was allegedly dangerous. The two lead investigators both knew before the warrant was signed that he was arrested and that he was not inside the apartment. I don't know how else to say it, but that's very misleading to the district court judge who's signing this warrant for the no-knock entry when that is the basis for the entry. They both testified that they reappraised the situation by listening to see if they could hear that people were inside, but nowhere did they discuss the fact that they knew that Mr. Smith had been arrested and that there was only possibly one person inside, and the person inside they had no information about. They both testified that they didn't know if that person was dangerous, they didn't know if that person had weapons, and they didn't have any idea of the person's criminal history. So without Mr. Smith in the picture and the fact that the officers knew that he was not around, there was no particularized danger inside the apartment, and their reappraisal was not proper at that point.
The officers knew that appellant was driving around Duluth with somebody who had a semi-automatic weapon.
Not appellant. Mr. Smith.
That Smith was.
Yep.
And so are you suggesting that in order to have a no-knock warrant based on dangerousness, that there has to be information from an informant who sees weapons inside the apartment?
I don't think we need to draw that bright-line rule.
No, because the Supreme Court has told us not to draw a bright-line rule. But what are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that there has to be some particularized danger inside the apartment. And there is nothing in this case besides the fact.
Okay, and how does that happen if not with an informant who's been inside the apartment?
I think if they did a more thorough criminal history check, or if there was criminal history or a past situation where Mr. Smith or someone else who they knew was in the apartment had been violent towards police before, or who had a violent nature in general, and had possessed guns at some time. It doesn't have to be from a confidential informant. It can also be a connection to somebody in the apartment, right? So if they knew that Mr. Smith possessed guns somewhere else, right, if he was the one who possessed guns or he had committed all of these prior offenses in Chicago with guns, there might be more there. That might be enough to say, look, he is the one that's inside this apartment at the time of the warrant signing. That might be a particularized danger. But we don't have that. There's no allegation that Mr. Smith has ever possessed a gun.
But why does it only matter if Smith was the one in possession of the gun? Why couldn't there be a suspicion of gun possession?
Because there has to be some objective, particularized fact that connects it to the apartment. And the only connection we have to the apartment is Mr. Smith.
And the fact that the drug operation is centered in the apartment.
Right, but the drug operation and Mr. Smith, there's no danger there. And we can't conclude that there's particularized danger just based on a drug operation. The fact that somebody else, some unknown person that we have no information about, we have no idea if he's ever been to the apartment, we have no idea where he was seen with this gun, there's just no connection to the apartment.
We know he was seen with Mr. Smith with the gun, though.
We know he was seen with Mr. Smith with the gun, but no one had ever said that we saw him walk into the apartment or that the CI had seen him, you know, some other time with Mr. Smith to corroborate the fact that he actually was part of this drug operation. The CI testified regarding how the drug operation works, and they pick up people and they deal drugs to them. So that person could easily have been somebody who purchased drugs from Mr. Smith and had never been at the apartment. There's just this giant leap from that allegation that this unknown person had a gun, that then there were guns inside, and that's just simply not enough.
Is there something, and maybe I just haven't read it carefully enough, but I just want to make sure I understand what the application says and what you're saying it says. So that it says toward the bottom of it, within the last 24 hours, the informant notified investigators that Smith was traveling around the Duluth area with an unknown black male that was in possession of. Is there somewhere else in here that tells us that it was in a car, that it was one time?
No.
Okay.
It's just that.
So was traveling around the area.
I suppose we could say that they're traveling in a bus or something else.
Right. Or they might be hanging on a moor. Was traveling around. One could look at that as like they are sort of, it's not just, oh, they appeared one time and there was a sale of a drug. You know what I mean? You're drawing some inferences from there. And I just want to make sure that there was nothing that told us that was traveling around with meant one time in a car. I guess the point is when they arrested Smith and the other person, I believe neither was armed. And so the argument is the unknown person who might be involved then in the drug dealing by virtue of traveling around with him may be the person in the apartment, right? That's the argument.
Well, I think there are two parts to that, right? So the first part is just what's in the warrant, and that has nothing to do with what takes place when he's arrested, right? So just the four corners of the warrant.
Yeah, agreed.
The second part would be when they reappraise. There is right. No evidence that the officers knew that there was not a firearm found at the time they entered the apartment. They testified that later on, DeRosi, the lead investigator, testified that at the end they did not find a gun on Mr. Smith. But there's no evidence that they knew that at the time they entered the apartment. The state has alleged that, but there's no evidence in the record.
They knew he had been arrested?
They knew he had been arrested, but DeRosi was not there at the arrest, and Investigator Kopp never testified that she conducted a search of anybody at the scene or that she knew what was found in the car. She immediately went to the apartment after the warrant was signed, and they entered the apartment. The search of Mr. Smith took place at the police station after, that DeRosi was there for that, but that was subsequent to the search of the apartment. So that this inference that somehow they knew that there were no guns found in the car is just simply not true, and that's not supported by the record. And even if they did know that, I don't think we will then go to the conclusion that those guns were inside the apartment when there was no allegation that there were ever guns inside the apartment. I don't think that's the fallback, is because the guns weren't in the car that they were somehow in the apartment. And again, they didn't testify that that was the case.
I'd like to ask you about whether or not the issue of probable cause for the warrant when it was issued is properly before the court. Assuming that the mention of probable cause for the warrant was contained in the original motion, if it wasn't actually litigated, if the record of the omnibus hearing indicated that the only issue litigated is whether or not the officers properly reassessed danger before executing the warrant, and if the memorandum that was submitted to the court after the hearing limits the focus to that issue of reassessing the danger, Is the issue of probable cause for the issuance of the warrant properly before us?
A couple things. First, we're not challenging probable cause of the issuance of the warrant.
Well, for
we're
the
challenging
no-knock.
Reasonable suspicion for the no-knock.
For the no-knock.
Yep. And so, again, how this happened was there was a very specific motion filed where there were five arguments why evidence should be suppressed. One of them was that there was not probable cause within the warrant. One of them was that there was not reasonable suspicion within
okay,
the warrant.
Okay, and that was in writing.
Yep.
And then you get to the hearing.
Right.
And we have a transcript of the hearing.
Yep.
And if that transcript indicates that the issue of probable cause for the no-knock portion of the warrant was never challenged at the hearing, is it properly before us?
Absolutely, because the hearing was just to develop the record regarding the facts at the time they entered the apartment. And when you're challenging the four corners of the warrant, either for probable cause or for reasonable suspicion, there is no additional information that needs to be added to the record. You are just looking at the four corners of the warrant and determining whether there's probable cause or reasonable suspicion.
I thought the focus of the omnibus was on whether or not the officers had reassessed the circumstances before they executed the no-knock.
Absolutely. Yep, that's what I'm saying. So at the threshold of the apartment, did they reassess the situation before they entered? That's the focus of the evidentiary hearing to develop the record. If I could just finish my answer.
Sure.
And then after that, there's a memorandum that's just based on the facts developed at that hearing. It's not saying we're withdrawing any of the issues. It's just for that one issue. Again, there were five other issues that the state responded to in their response memorandum after the hearing as well. So nobody below believed that this was withdrawn. If you look at the state's response, there's a whole section regarding why there's reasonable suspicion. If the prosecutor below believes that they need to argue that after the hearing, it's clearly not withdrawn. And then the trial court then, in its order, ruled on the issue, muddied both of the issues together, kind of, but in a paragraph said that the authorization was valid, and then said, in addition, they need to reappraise the situation before entrance. So the judge addressed both issues.
Okay. So can I just follow up? And yep. I could look at the record and know this. So from all of the issues that were in the motion, the only one that was briefed was the reappraisal.
Correct.
Post-hearing. And you're saying all of the other issues, including probable cause, including the sufficient or the reasonable suspicion for the no-knock, et cetera, all remained alive.
Correct.
And in fact, were each of those, including probable cause, addressed by the state's brief?
Yes.
Even though they were not, none of them was addressed by
it. Absolutely. Okay. And one more thing. There was one argument in there regarding the inventory. I think it's the fifth or the fourth issue.
Yes, fifth.
At mm-hmm. the hearing, the defense attorney expressly said, we are withdrawing this issue. So if they were withdrawing the reasonable suspicion argument, they would have done the same thing, and they didn't do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, my name is Peter Magnuson. I'm an assistant attorney general and I represent the respondent state of Minnesota in this case. I don't want to spend a lot of time on whether it was waived or not because the argument on the merits is compelling and requires affirmance. But whether the state argued the issues below is really not the issue. It was appellant's motion. He has the burden to convince the court of his position. If he doesn't offer any argument to the court, then I don't see how you've kept that issue alive. But
it's not the state's burden at the omnibus?
It is the state's burden, but the defendant lays out what the issues are.
Right. And then, so you would argue that he waived the reasonable suspicion for the no-knock as well as the probable cause and anything else that was not briefed?
If it's not, my experience dealing with motions is there's oftentimes many boilerplate motions are filed, and then we get to the hearing, and then we actually find out what are the issues that we're going to contest and we're going to go forward on. It looks to me, from reading the brief or the memo below from defendant, that this was not an issue that they were going forward on. But apart from that, looking at on the merits, in response to a question posed, counsel stated that it's equally reasonable to believe that the unknown man with the gun was not connected to the apartment. And I just don't think that's the standard. As this court, I point this out on page 10 of my brief, talking about this court's decision in Barnes. And the standard is, quote, police must show a reasonable suspicion that knocking and announcing would be dangerous or futile in order to support a no-knock entry. So there just needs to be reasonable suspicion. The idea that there could be an equally likely explanation for it, that's not the reasonable articulable suspicion standard. That's more like the circumstantial evidence standard. Are there other inferences that can be drawn? Well, any DWI stop, any speeding stop, anything, there are always other inferences that can be drawn, and many of them are reasonable. But that's not the standard that we look at. The standard is there reasonable articulable suspicion? And here there's more than enough. In Barnes, there was no description of a gun. There is no evidence of a firearm. But the court looks at all of the evidence available to the police officers, violent history, gang association, and the significant drug dealing, and inferred from that that there was potentially a danger to officer safety. Here, as we've discussed, there is a description of Dante Smith driving around Duluth, not at some amorphous time in the future. He's driving around Duluth the day before with a guy with a gun. At the time of
Is that how you read that? Within the last 24 hours, CRI notified that he was... I wasn't sure what that 24 hours referred to myself.
My understanding is the day before he was observed. Maybe the
CRI
report came the day...
Him. Yeah, okay.
Came the day before. But I read it as the day before he was seen driving around with somebody with a gun. So does that provide reasonable belief to believe that there may be guns involved in this? Certainly. And as I pointed out in my brief, the fact that there wasn't a gun found in the car, I think only heightens the belief that this gun may be in the apartment. And the person that was unidentified the day before, and now we have this unidentified person coming in and out of the apartment, and they know this person is still in the apartment.
So you're talking about the time of reappraisal.
Yeah, now I'm leeching into the reappraisal. But
so respond to the argument that they didn't actually know that Smith and his, whoever he was with, were found without guns, that the officers who executed the search didn't know that at the time.
I think the fact that nobody had told them we found a gun, I think that's significant.
So they didn't know there was not a gun.
Correct. They
no
knew there was a gun.
Them.
They knew there was an unidentified male the day before with a gun. Mm-hmm. And they know there's an unidentified male in the apartment. At the time that they are standing outside the apartment, they have no reason to believe that this gun has been accounted for. So the officer cop, and this is on page 9 of the joint omnibus hearing, down starting on line 15. Additionally, I knew that there was still at least one male inside that apartment because I had a visual from the outside of the building and I could see the people coming and going from apartment 8. And I had seen Mr. Rayford come and go a couple of times. But then he had remained inside the apartment when other individuals had left from the apartment. So I knew that we had at least one person. I heard many voices, so I assumed that there was could possibly be many people inside that apartment, and then we had the information about the guns. So at that point, nobody has told any of the officers on the scene that the gun has been accounted for. So absent that information, the issue is, has the belief been dispelled? That's the issue. Has it been dispelled?
Okay, I'm curious about your use of the word guns, plural. And that ties in. I recognize that we review the issuance of the no-knock warrant independently. But I'm curious about the district court's order on page addendum A8. The court said, in this matter, law enforcement had legitimate safety concerns due to information regarding the presence of firearms in the apartment, Mr. Smith's violent criminal history, and the significant narcotics distribution linked to the apartment. What is the information that we see coming out of the omnibus hearing with respect to, or in the supporting affidavit for the warrant, with regard to the presence of firearms, plural, in the apartment?
I think that's Barnes. Barnes is, there's no evidence, direct evidence, of firearms inside the apartment. But Barnes looks at the totality of the circumstances and believes that that's an inference, that a legitimate inference that could be drawn, and it provided a reasonable basis for issuing the no knock.
Okay. The district court said in this matter, but I...
In this matter, looking at the violent history and the significant drug trafficking, the use of the plural guns, I think, is unfortunate by the officer. I think that's just simply an oversight, because the knowledge that they had was a handgun the day before. Okay. But whether it's a gun or guns, guns would certainly be overkill. But one gun, I would submit.
But there was never any information regarding even one gun in the apartment, was there?
That's correct. But again,
so your argument is that this finding is supported by an inference based on what was stated in the...
It could be supported simply if there was not the information about the handgun seen with the person the day before. Under this court's decision in Barnes and the analysis in Barnes, I think the order could be upheld. It's just, is there a reasonable basis to suspect it here? We've got a significant drug dealing operation. This isn't a fly-by-night operation. This is something that they have been surveilling for 30 days. So this is a significant drug operation. They know a fair amount about Dante Smith. So based on Barnes, I think that inference, but I think the fact that they have tied a handgun to one of the principals the day before, I think, just pushes it over the edge.
But the information you just read a bit ago suggested that the police knew it was Rayford in the apartment. At least Rayford was in the apartment, or did I misunderstand that?
They didn't know his name, but
they knew who the person was. Is there anything that would suggest that he could have been the person seen with Smith in possession of a gun?
No. Okay. No, they don't have any. What is in the warrant application is unidentified black male. There's no description of clothing, nothing else beyond that. So of all the people, the unidentified black males that Dante Smith had direct contact with, there's one person. One of those people is in the apartment, and that turns out to be appellant. So the warrant was sufficient, and there was no reason to believe, for the officers to believe at the time, that their concerns had been dispelled. So at the time, the reappraisal was sufficient. I just want to touch briefly on the second issue, even though that wasn't argued. Conceptually, I'm having a little difficult time looking at how we tie this argument to what actually happened here. Here, the jury was given instructions about aiding and abetting. The jury was, to my recollection, and I looked through the instructions this morning and I did not see it. There was no argument or an instruction about joint possession, which was interesting. But the instruction was, here's what a first degree controlled substance sale is. There was no specific requirement that in order to find appellant guilty of count one, that there had to be an aid and abet. And I'm just going to point the court to page 571, starting with line 19. This is appellant's closing argument below. So, as you know, the cocaine was all in Mr. Rayford's pocket. If you find that he was going to sell 17 or more grams of that, then it's a first-degree sale. If you find that he possessed it, it's a second-degree possession. So that was the argument before the jury, and the instructions before the jury were, if you find that he possessed 17 grams of cocaine with the intent to sell it, he could be convicted of count one. And that's clearly what the jury did. There was no objection to the jury instructions below, and there's no claim here on appeal that the jury instructions were faulty. So I'd ask, unless there are some more questions, I'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Regarding the information that the officers had regarding Mr. Rayford at the time of the entry, after Investigator DeRosa stated that he knew that it was Mr. Rayford inside, he testified in response to a question on page 41. You didn't have any description of that black person that had the firearm other than that he was black. Correct. You don't have any reason to believe that it was Mr. Rayford that was riding around with the firearm. No, sir. There's no evidence that Mr. Rayford had the firearm. They knew it was Mr. Rayford inside the apartment, and they had no other information that he was dangerous or that he had done anything else in the past that would allow for them to infer or have anything more than a hunch that it was dangerous to knock and announce their presence. And that is the standard. That if they had new information that Mr. Smith had been arrested, and that was enough to negate any sort of theory that they were in danger by not announcing their presence. The court doesn't have any other questions. We request that the court reverse Mr. Rayford's convictions and, in the alternative, reverse his conviction for aiding and abetting sale of cocaine. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. Have a decision out in a statutory time period. Thank you.